Good evening. This is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is Joseph Leary, poet. At various experiences, he did service as a Marine, an FBI agent, and a periodontist. But we're talking about his collection of poetry, Till the Well Runs Dry. Joe, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to talk to you about this book.
Well, I'm very happy to be here, and thanks for the opportunity, Mark.
Now, I got to ask you, because it's really funny, and people have got to do this when you buy the book, is read what you've done in the past. So your life could have gone anywhere, essentially.
Oh, sure. And it did go anywhere.
Well, I know, and it could have gone a bunch of other places. But why did you decide, at this point in my life, I'm going to write poetry? Did you always write poetry?
No, but I always, when I look back at it and I wonder, because I went through all these other semi-vocations, and I soon found most of them to be not really what I wanted to do in life. And when I look back, I went to a Catholic high school, where I studied predominantly classics. You know, we had Greek and Latin and French. And by the time I finished my 4 years with the Jesuits, I was ready to do anything different. So when I went over to BC, I went to the business school.
Okay. And,
as a matter of self-knowledge, I know that the last thing I was interested in at the time was in business. I have eventually realized that business was like any other vocation, and you could really do something good there, but I had a rather low opinion of business at the time. But there I was, and I was studying marketing. And marketing was, the reason I chose that was the only thing that really had some writing in it. But that didn't register with me at the time. But I wrote a couple of short stories during my freshman year. And I should have realized then that it was time for me to transfer over to arts and sciences. But I didn't do that.
Well, okay, and, stop right there. Why didn't you do that?
Why didn't I?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think in the back of my mind, I probably felt it was very difficult to get into arts and sciences at that time. Hmm. The business school was, in fact, a place where lots of people who couldn't get into arts and sciences went over there to the business school. Eventually, now the business school is one of the biggest of the schools at Boston College, and that's where all the money comes from the people who do well there. So, you know, it has risen to a place of high status there. But I wasn't sure. Maybe I was just not confident that I could get in over there. And still, as I was throughout my life, not really sure what I wanted to do. And, you know, it seems like that has gone on the whole time, until I finally reached these years when I had the opportunity to write and really write and spend a lot of time and realize that is where my real interest has always been.
Oh, man.
No matter what else I did. In the Marine Corps, I had a job as a historian for a while, and in dentistry, I got involved in writing textbooks on implant dentistry. And these were all things I really enjoyed, and they were all harking back to what really was my primary interest in something that I failed to recognize at the time. But, you know, I get philosophical about all that. All these different things I've done actually have given me experiences that I can now draw on in the writing.
That's right. So, that's what your poems are about, those kinds of things.
They are.
But have you do you still write prose?
I started out, when I retired, I got involved in writing, and I started out going to a place called Grub Street in Boston.
Oh, I know that, yeah.
Yeah, and I was learning how to do personal essays. So I really started out doing that sort of thing. I can't put my finger on when I got involved with the poetry. And I had always been a little adverse to poetry, because the rhyming aspect of it seemed to me to be an obstacle, and it struck me as being very mechanical and restricting my ability to really express myself. But once I started to find out that there was this thing called free verse, where I really could just tell little stories and dress them up with imagery and the proper use of words and condense the ideas, that whole business became very interesting to me, and that's how I got launched on this.
Well, let's talk about the collection, Till the Well Runs Dry. Did you, and this is a question I ask poets.
Yep.
Did you write for the collection, or has the collection just occurred after you got a certain amount of poetry done?
The latter.
Okay.
I just wrote poems. In fact, I was involved with a group, and we had a mentor, and we would write, we'd be given prompts. And
yep,
that's how the whole business started. And over time, I came to see that I was ignoring the prompts and just drawing on my own experiences in life, a lot of them having to do with my family and my early life. So that's really, as I cranked out these poems, I had no idea that I was going to try to publish it. But at some point, when I start to have quite a number of them, and I was intrigued with the idea of publishing them. And I've often wondered about that, because at this age, I'm not really pursuing any kind of monetary reward or fame or any of that sort of thing. So, but somewhere in me, there's a great pleasure that comes with the idea of people reading these
yep.
works and saying nice things about them, if that's the way it happens.
And if they don't have nice things to say, is that okay, too?
So far, Mark, I haven't had too many of those. They've been quiet. If they don't like them, they haven't mentioned it to me.
These poems are so personal.
Who
are you writing these poems for originally? Were you writing... Are you writing to get the thoughts and feelings out of your head and onto the page where you can reflect back on them? Or are you writing them for your family, your friends, or just the general audience?
All of those things. The family loves these things because they're little treasures. And I have a big family. I have six sisters and a brother. And the family history is it's always fun for me to be in on it. I was born at the end of the line, pretty much. I have a younger brother, but I have six older sisters, and they are a treasury of information that I didn't have access to when we were growing up. So I write for them, and I write for myself, and I write now. I see that there's almost a magic about doing these poems. I get asked about where the ideas come from, and I had read over time, people say, whether it's prose or poetry, people would say, these ideas just come into my head, and the stories sort of write themselves. And I have to say that is exactly what happens. One of the poems I've just written for what I hope will be another book was sparked by my wife holding up two socks. One of the socks was long and furry, and the other one was short. They were mismatched pair from my Marine Corps days. And when she held them up like that, I could see immediately that there was going to be a poem coming out of that sock. And it did, and it's a really nice little poem. But that's whenever I try to push, or even when I would try to follow these prompts, the magic wasn't really there. I was learning the craft of poetry by doing that, and what poetry was all about. And I really, I have learned a lot about how to construct a poem. But I still have a lot to learn. But I get great pleasure out of putting words together that. When you get them together and they work, you just—it's like magic, and it's a real pleasure, and it's worth all the effort. But the real fun comes in the editing. Actually, once I have the idea, like the socks, I try to get the poem, if you will, down on a piece of paper, and then over the next couple of weeks, I have the pleasure and the experience of having ideas just pop into your head that are sparked by that outline that you've written. And I've also learned that I need to really wait. When I think a poem is finished, I am learning to wait, because I have seen when I go back many times, lots of extra good stuff coming, just popping into my head based upon what I'm reading there in my own, you know, initial outline.
Have you ever gone back and thrown out a poem?
Yes.
Okay.
That's a difficult thing to do, because most of these things take a lot of work.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I've read others, authors saying, you know, you need to learn to kill your babies. it's a very difficult thing to do, because you do get attached to them and all the effort that went into them. But sometimes I just feel this is dead. This thing doesn't have any life in it, so I need to let it go. And I do, but not many.
Is there a favorite time of the day for you to write? Or do you just do it immediately when you have the stimulus?
Yeah, I just do it. Sometimes what it is I'll get an idea, and it could be any time during the day, just like when I was looking at my wife with the two unmatched socks. There's no favorite time. I know some people love to do that. I think prose people may tend to do that more often than people who write poetry, but I don't know that, but I sense that that's the case. Seems like a more disciplined bit of work that should be scheduled.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name's Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is Joseph Leary, poet. At various times in his life, he's done service as a Marine, an FBI agent, a periodontist. And we're talking about his new collection, Till the Well Runs Dry. Before we hear you read one of your poems, Joe, talk to me about the person who did the illustrations for the book.
Oh, yeah, my brother Jack. Now, there's an interesting fella. He's a self-taught artist. He has attended the museum school in Boston and done some other, been trained in other ways, but basically he's learned the art himself. And he's a guy who, when he was, I think he was 28, he had, up until that time, he was just a carouser, a wild man of his time, which was the 60s, more or less. And he's 10 years younger than I am. So we really had different lives entirely. I was off in the service while he was growing up. But anyway, he was struck down with diabetes at 28, and it was insulin-dependent diabetes, a very serious condition.
Oh, yeah.
And what that did was change his life dramatically. There was no margin for living the life he had been living if he wanted to continue living. And he quit his job. He was selling cars and running around with his buddies, getting high and drinking alcohol and all that stuff. And he quit the job. He drifted away from the life that he had before. And gradually, he had been dabbling in art before. He was the kind of guy in high school who was not on the college track, as they used to call it. And so he didn't have great social standing in his class. But when they learned that he could draw and do really lovely work, even at that age, he experienced the value of being able to have that skill. And his social standing grew greatly at the high school. So that reinforced his desire to do that, and he kept it up. And then after the diabetes hit, he quit his work. He no longer was going to work for anyone else and spend his hours getting paid by the hour. He left that kind of world and went off and traveled all around the world. He, you know, spent time in India and Europe and Mexico, and really lived. He lived the life of a Buddhist monk for quite a while, and then he moved back here and got more serious about his art. And so that's when I started writing these poems. I thought maybe he would be interested in illustrating some
nice.
Of these. And he was. And the art that appears in the book is digital art for the entirely digital art. But he has a host. He has a website where he's got all his original work, and it's really high quality and very sophisticated stuff. That's his life, and he's really a great guy.
I like this. So it's a brother's project.
Yeah, it is very much. And even though I'm 10 years older than he is, my life was really more or less the traditional kind of thing. I had the traditional values of going to college and going off and trying to find the right career and all that stuff. But he never did that. Once he got his diabetes, he just lived a different kind of life that was not based on any kind of anyone else's idea of what you should do. Huh. He just never did that. But out of that kind of a life comes a very interesting character, and he has helped me over the years to have a different kind of understanding of what's important in life. He earned his understanding the hard way, and of course that's the way anybody earns it, but he earned it, and I was lucky enough to have long conversations with him, and I grew to pick up a lot of what he had learned.
Can I ask you to read a poem?
Sure.
Now, you don't read poems regularly. You're not out on the circuit.
No.
Well, okay. So do you mind this?
No, not at all. No.
Okay.
But, you know, I read them around here sometimes because sometimes it's really enjoyable to read them. I like reading them, and they have a whole different...
Yeah, but it's I was going to say it's a totally different experience reading in front of people.
Yeah, it is. Okay, I'm going to start. And you're right, you know, you made a comment about my poems being somewhat epic, many of them.
Oh, my God.
And they are.
They're huge. They're long. It's nothing wrong with that. But you just tended to, that's the form that you like. You like long stuff.
Yeah, that's why when I describe these to people who I know are not really interested in poetry, I tell them that these are really just like little short stories.
Yeah,
and I try to make it interesting by using language as well as I can. But anyway, this particular poem is called "Boy in the Red Sneakers."
Okay,
and it was it flowed from an experience that I had recently when I went to Japan with my daughter and her two daughters. When I was in the service, I was stationed in Okinawa, and I really developed a love for all things Asian, and I had spent time in China and Japan before, so I was itching to go back, and I had taken my two sons to Japan a number of years ago, so this was probably my last-ditch effort to go, and my daughter invited herself along, and I was very, very happy to have her come and her daughters. So anyway, here it is, Boy in the Red Sneakers. The old man, scratching his travel itch, is visiting Japan with his daughter and two granddaughters. In the Tomigaya neighborhood of Tokyo, the ghosts of Dogen and Confucius drift and touch meditative merchants, mindful in their shops of vintage clothing, tea bars, gastropubs, and more, and welcome the old man and his daughter with arigato gozaimasu. The old man tires, standing and traipsing from shop to shop. They stop for coffee at the Beastie Coffee Lab. In the shop, numbers of sleek-looking professionals, handsome, with thick, shiny black hair, are generally dressed in darks while quietly making digital love to their computers. Approaching the side of the counter, they are wordlessly redirected to the proper position with a wave of the hand. On the menu, they point and place an order. A detached young man in loose gray smock nods. They count their yen and take their seats at a two-chair table. The fragrance of incense with notes of cinnamon, clove, mirror mix with the silence in the spotless space. I gotta get this. Okay. The old man watches as the barista in a black smock prepares the coffee in a spirit of stillness, hands flowing, his movements smooth, deliberate, and unhurried, like a priest celebrating mass. A narrow stream of hot water appears from the mouth of a gooseneck kettle, streaming in discreet concentric circles over the grounds, teasing out the dark essence of the coffee within. When ready, the barista flows cat-like between the tables to place the cups before them, turning the handle of each cup to the proper pickup position. Later, they shoot off on a bullet train to Kyoto, the city of shrines. They wander through a craft fair in sunny Umagoji Park. The old man, weary with heat and walking, sits to rest on a stone wall, his body filling with relief, rising like a rising tide of pleasure in a gentle orgasm. He is aware of becoming less, his gait no longer fluid, his hearing no longer acute, his mind no longer quick, his stamina seeping away. He begins to see himself now as others see him, the old man exchanging the gift of experience for his physical gifts. A boy in red sneakers is chasing a yellow butterfly. The butterfly slips and slides, zigs and zags, upping and downing. The boy whoops with a sense of boundless energy, a love of the run and the chase. Leaving the park on a train ride far below the city surface, next to him sits a young girl doing her little girl thing. She slouches, wriggles, hands now rubbing her head, now fingering her ear, now pulling her lip, now whining. Her father shushes her gently, takes her hands in his, puts them down in her lap. She straightens and becomes quiet. The only sound, the train rocking slightly, wishing along the tunnel darkness. Lids slip over eyes. Cell phones threaten to fall from sleeping hands. That's it.
That's a wonderful poem. It's also, you write poems that are very visual, almost like they're scripts for a film.
Yeah,
like if you were to direct a film, like I could imagine that being a short film.
Well, I think that's probably true. I love movies, by the way, so I'm sure that that's had an impact on my writing in some indirect way. But, you know, I watch lots and lots of movies. And at some points along the way, like lots of other writers, have thought about what it might be to write a screenplay. But I've never done that.
You already have. That's the poem. And then what
okay.
You do is you're just matching the visuals as you read the poem. I think that would be an amazing thing to try to do. What I love about there are several recurring themes in your poetry. And we only have minutes left, by the way. One of the things I love is I learned that you really love poached eggs.
Yeah, I do actually love poached eggs.
Poached eggs and coffee.
Exactly. I've got one right here.
Also, a number of your poems talk about your relationship with your father.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, I think one of Jack's best visual works in this is that really dramatic portrait of your father.
Yeah.
Almost looks like a film noir piece.
Exactly.
Talk to me about your father. What was your relationship to your father?
Well,
it seems like a lot of things are unsettled based on your poems.
Well, that's true, because my father was a very quiet man, as it says in some of these poems. He had his own troubles. He was a good guy. He had a big family, and we didn't have much money, but I really admired, in retrospect, admired his ability to just keep marching along and doing what needed to be done, you know, to keep that show on the road. But I remember sitting with him and hoping to have a conversation of the kind, you know, that we're having right now, or that I might have with my brother. But he was a guy who wasn't gifted with words, and I'm sure he had all these thoughts that we might be communicating, but he didn't have the ability to communicate that with me. So in one of those poems I say I wish I knew him.
Right.
And that's true. I just felt like I never really knew my dad, and it took years before I appreciated what a great guy he really was, in his quiet way. But he wasn't really cut out to be a married man with a big family.
What would he have thought of you being a poet?
He would love that. You know, my idea of being a Marine came from him. He was a guy that, during the Second World War, went to the Marine recruiter with a friend, and the friend had flat feet, so he couldn't get in. And my father's story was, so that meant that he wasn't going to go either. But he was working in the Navy Yard, so he was exempted from, you know. So, but the main thing with my dad was I really felt badly in retrospect that I didn't, that I wasn't a closer guy with him in the years that I was growing up.
But he was the parent. It was his responsibility.
I suppose.
Joe, we're out of time. Now, I got a question for you. How can people get this book?
Oh, it's on Amazon, and it's available through the publisher Kelsey Books.
Okay.
That's K-E-L-S-A-Y. Kelsey Books, but it's on Amazon. Most people are going to go there.
Okay, great. My guest tonight has been Joseph Leary, poet. At various times in his life, he did service as a Marine, an FBI agent. I'd like to know more about that. And periodontist. And we're talking about his collection of poetry. This is your first, right, Joe?
It is, yeah.
Till the Well Runs Dry. Joe, it's been a real pleasure.
Mark, thank you. And so quickly, it's over. Maybe if I get another book out, I have enough for another one, and maybe I can come back and talk to you.
Well, you can also, we can still continue a conversation about this book, too. So we'll see.
I would love to tell you about the FBI.
Okay. You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.